Well, hello, this is Bob Sutherland from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from the Wall Street Journal, from Reuters, Bloomberg, Triangle Business Journal, the business section of the Raleigh News and Observer. Today's reading of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency. They've served our community so well since 1974 and can be reached by dialing 919-781-1973. Well, at the close of business on Wednesday, July the 10th, the Dow Jones was up just over 76 points, closing at 26,860. The S&P was up 13.44. to close at $29.93.07. Gold was up $12.60 to close at $14.10. And crude oil was up $2.60 to close at $60.43. Well, Swiss industrial maker ABB, a sea of brown Bavaria, plans to add more than 400 jobs in Orange County after receiving an incentive package worth a total of $7.6 million. Now, ABB, whose North American headquarters is in Cary, plans to consolidate its distribution and manufacturing hub in Mebane with the incentives. The Mebane facility used to be owned by General Electric, a subsidiary that ABB bought in 2017. The state will be awarded $5.5 million of the $7.6 million package, with Orange County giving $953,000 and the city of Mebane giving $1.1 million. Of the $5.5 million coming from the state, $4.3 million is a jobs development investment grant. Every year over a 12-year period, ABB will be checked to see if it created the agreed-upon number of jobs. Supporters of JDIG argue that the incentives pay for themselves because a company pays companies based on a percentage of the new tax revenue their jobs generate. No money is paid until the company meets job and investment requirements, the News and Observer previously reported. Mebane Mayor Glendale Stevenson said the investment is a chance to rejuvenate the business. He goes on to say, unless there are significant changes, he's been mayor for 35 years. He goes on and says, rarely does any business operate more than 25 years. We are now seeing this plant is going to have a new life, major changes, major innovation, new people, and hopefully another new life for the plant. Well, Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell said through the New York Times yesterday that an interest rate cut may come soon. That sends stocks to a new high as the benchmark's S&P 500 traded above 3,000 for the first time. Powell, testifying before the House Financial Services Committee, said risks to the United States economy remain, including President Trump's trade war and global economic weakness, suggesting a cut may be more likely than not when the Fed meets again later this month. While the Fed continues to expect a solid job market and gradually increasing inflation, officials have been watching data to gauge whether a rate move is needed to sustain the economic expansion, which hit a record length earlier this month. Powell told lawmakers that it appears that uncertainties around trade tensions and concerns about the strength of the global economy continue to weigh on the United States economic outlook. These comments, which suggest economic trouble on the horizon, push markets higher as investors ignored the possible storm clouds and cheered the increased likelihood that the Fed will soon lower borrowing costs and make stocks more appealing. Well, in Cary, the Deutsche Bank is laying all 51 employees at its Cary office. That's according to a notice sent to the North Carolina Department of Commerce. Deutsche Bank, a German investment bank, will lay off employees from August 7 to August 21, the company said in a work adjustment and retraining notification on July the 8th. The cut comes after the Deutsche Bank CEO Christian Suing announced Sunday that 18,000 employees would be laid off around the world, roughly one in five jobs at the bank, according to CNN. Suing said in a conference call that layoffs started Monday in Asia. He goes on and says, I am very much aware that in our rebuilding, we are making deep cuts. I personally greatly regret the impact this will have on some of the employees. Well, U.S. consumers borrowed more on their credit cards in May and also took out more student and auto loans. That's a modest sign of economic health. The Federal Reserve says that consumer borrowing increased 5% that month, just below April's 5.2 rise. Total outstanding consumer debt, which excludes mortgages, stood at nearly $4.1 trillion in May. Steady increases in consumer borrowing echo other recent data showing that consumers remain confident in the economy and willing to spend. Retail sales rose for the third straight month in May. Well, from the Minneapolis Star Tribune out of Minneapolis, Minnesota, they report that 2 years ago, large investors salivated over takeovers in the Big Food and Minnesota's Giant General Mills appeared to be on the menu. Today, the narrative of the food industry is being reset. Big food makers need to compete with small innovators who are racing to satisfy consumer tastes and habits that are expanding in new directions. Takeover artists who merge firms such as Kraft and Heinz and mined them for excess costs have fallen from the wake of Wall Street darlings to cautionary tales. The owner of Kraft Heinz cut too deep, making it much tougher for that food maker to compete. Meanwhile, companies such as General Mills, once considered vulnerable, are now preferred by many investors. If the industry's last era was all about slash and burn cost savings, the new one is about growing sales and reinvesting its brands. Well, locally, Macy's department store at Crabtree Valley remains closed following damage from a Friday afternoon fire in a fitting room that previously led to evacuation. Raleigh firefighters got the call at 5:37 p.m. Friday. According to a report from the fire department, with 35 firefighters responding, the NNO reported. But when they arrived, the report said no flames were showing because they had been extinguished by the sprinkler system in a second-floor fitting room. Julie Bartos, a Macy's spokesman, said in an email Saturday, "We are thankful that all of our customers and Macy's colleagues are safe and accounted for with no injuries. The store is closed today as it undergoes water remediation." Bartos said that the store remained closed Sunday, but did not indicate when it would reopen. In the meantime, she said customers can go to Macy's at Triangle Town Center or shop online at Macy's.com. She said in an update on store hours for the Crabtree store would be provided as soon as the reopening is confirmed. ABC, News and Observer's media partner, reported that investigators determined that the fire had been intentionally set. Well, from the Associated Press in Washington, lower than expected tax revenues now mean there is a significant risk that the federal government will run out of borrowing authority in the early part of September. That's according to a new analysis by the Bipartisan Policy Center. That's a Washington think tank and advocacy group. The report adds urgency to Washington budget and debt talks that have yet to go anywhere. The main culprit is that tax revenues are persistently weaker than anticipated, said Shai Akabas, the group's economic policy director, growing by 2% to 3% instead of the 5 to 6% anticipated earlier. The group, which has had good track record in prior estimates, said 2 months ago that policymakers had until at least October before the threat of default. The new estimate echoes warnings from Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin, who is the lead Trump administration negotiator in talks on a bipartisan level to lift the government's borrowing cap and prevent automatic budget cuts from hitting the Pentagon and domestic agencies. Talks founded before the July 4th recess, but are sure to take on added urgency since the democratically controlled House has just 3 work weeks this month before a scheduled 6-week summer vacation. House Speaker Pelosi, Democrat of California, is taking the lead on Capitol Hill, along with Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, Republican of Kentucky. At issue is the government's $22 trillion borrowing cap, or debt limit, in Washington parlance. It needs to be raised soon or the government won't be able to pay all its bills and obligations, a situation lawmakers have always managed to prevent. Market analysis warned that defaulting or U.S. obligations could spook investors, slam debt markets, and increase borrowing costs for the government and individuals. Both Pelosi and McConnell vow that the government won't be allowed to default, but both also wish to link the debt limit issue with a concurrent effort to set new spending caps for the agency budgets that Congress sets every year. Well, Saudi carrier cancels troubled Boeing 737 for the Airbus. Boeing's campaign to restore the reputation of its best-selling plane after 2 deadly crashes suffered a blow, with a Saudi airline canceling an order worth up to $5.6 billion in favor of a European rival of the United States manufacturer. Flyadeal, the budget airline arm of Saudi Arabia Airlines Corporation, ordered 30 A320neo jets from Airbus and took options on 20 more, meaning that its entire fleet will consist of planes from that company. It's a potentially troubling sign for Boeing, which has not seen customers divert orders to Airbus en masse. A small number of airlines have threatened to cancel 737 MAX orders since crashes off the coast of Indonesia and in Ethiopia, killing 346 people. The MAX has been grounded since March. Officials with Indonesia's Garuda said in March that they were canceling the remaining 49 of a 50-jet MAX order. Published reports suggest the airline and Boeing are in talks, however, and Boeing still lists the 49 Garuda orders on its website. Similarly, the owner of Lion Air, the Indonesia airline whose MAX jet was involved in the first fatal crash in October, vowed to cancel. Boeing still lists the airline's 187 unfilled orders as active. Middle Eastern carriers Fly Dubai and Oman Air have threatened to switch to Airbus. Well, U.S. job openings fell 0.7% in May, and hires dipped 4.4%. The Labor Department said Tuesday that employers posted 7.3 million in jobs in May. They hired 5.7 million, down from the record 6 million in April. The report, known as Job Openings and Labor Turnover Survey, suggests that employers remain optimistic about economic growth, just their pace of expected hiring has slowed somewhat after more than a decade of economic expansion. Well, from Raleigh, Medicaid expansion bill called a step forward. Medicaid expansion may come to North Carolina, but it won't be quite what supporters want it to be. A Republican compromise version of Medicaid expansion moved forward in a House committee Tuesday with bipartisan support. And Democratic Governor Roy Cooper rolled out his own budget compromise at the same time. But more than a week into the new fiscal year with no spending plan in place, the GOP-controlled legislature and Cooper remain at an impasse. The compromised bill, heard in the House committee, called North Carolina Health Care for Working Families, is a type of Medicaid expansion, said House Speaker Tim Moore on Monday. He goes on to say it's not the full expansion that Cooper wants, and it includes work requirements. Representative Donnie Lambeth, a Winston-Salem Republican, calls it an alternative option that might fit North Carolina's culture. Lambeth said it would serve 300,000 North Carolinians who currently have no health insurance and up to 500,000 in total if everyone eligible uses it. The work requirement is a key difference between this and Cooper's Medicaid expansion. Participants' costs would be 2% of their household income, billed monthly. It would cover those residents who meet all federal Medicaid citizenship and immigration requirements and are not eligible for Medicaid under the current program. Other requirements include their modified adjusted gross income is not higher than 133% of the federal poverty level, they are not entitled to or enrolled in Medicare Part A and B, and they are between the ages of 19 and 64. The House committee voted 25-6 in favor of the bill. A lot of moving parts on that. From Washington again in the Associated Press, Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell said Tuesday that the Fed's annual stress tests of the nation's largest banks will need to evolve to keep pace with a changing financial system. Powell called the tests, which determine whether a bank could survive a severe economic downturn, one of the most successful supervisory innovations achieved in the aftermath of the 2008 financial crisis. But Powell said that it is important that the tests are adjusted from year to year to, quote, explore even quite unlikely scenarios, unquote, to guard against complacency on the part of bank regulators and banks. Powell's remarks were delivered in a video message at the start of a conference on stress tests being sponsored by the Fed's Boston Regional Bank. The Fed last month determined in this year's stress test that all 18 of the nation's largest banks were strong enough to withstand a severe economic downturn and gave approval to the capital plans that banks submitted as part of the stress test exercise. That approval cleared the way for the bank's plans for paying out dividends and paying back shares, and buying back shares. In his remarks, Powell said that the stress test begun in 2009 had been a major success from the very beginning, helping to restore confidence following a severe financial crisis. He went on to say the first stress test done in 2009 helped restore confidence by providing a credible and independent picture of the bank's finances. Well, IBM's $34 billion purchase of Red Hat has officially closed, the two companies announced on Tuesday. The last October, IBM said it would buy the Raleigh-based software maker for $34 billion, or $190 a share, making Red Hat the biggest acquisition that IBM has made in its 107-year history and the world's largest technology deal ever. That's according to Bloomberg. The deal will make Red Hat part of IBM's cloud division, the two companies said when the deal was announced last year. Red Hat CEO Jim Whitehurst will become part of IBM's senior management team and will report to IBM CEO Jenny Rometty. Rometty has said previously that the deal is critical to stay competitive in the hybrid cloud software landscape, where IBM is currently competing with tech giants such as Microsoft, Google, and Amazon. The hybrid cloud, where companies use a mix of on-site private and third-party cloud services such as Amazon's Oz and Microsoft's Azure. It's an emerging trillion-dollar opportunity that the companies want to be prepared for, Rometty noted last year. The two companies have stressed that Red Hat will remain largely independent as part of the deal, but many in the Raleigh area have worried about a potential culture clash between IBM and the open-source ethos of Red Hat. At the unveiling of a new Red Hat logo in May, Whitehurst stressed that Red Hat was still going to be operating in an independent manner. At that time, the company was trading in its logo from the late 90s for a new, sleeker version. He said, "We were in the process of doing this when the IBM merger came up, so this is certainly demonstrating that it is business as usual." Went on to say, "We did this independently, we showed it to them, but we didn't make any changes, and they were supportive of it, and if it made sense before the deal, then it makes sense after becoming we are independent." During the conference call on Tuesday, Arvind Krishna, IBM Senior Vice President of Cloud and Cognitive Software, said Red Hat's sales team would remain separate. It's important, he added, for IBM to remain neutral to protect the ecosystem of developers it has created. Well, President Donald Trump's trade war with China has been felt around the world. The latest casualty, the South Korean electronics giant Samsung Electronics. The company said Friday that it expected its second quarter operating profit to fall more than 50% to $6.5 trillion from about $5.6 billion. It only managed to beat analyst expectations because of a one-time gain in its display business. Samsung's disclosure Friday illustrated the troubles that an escalating series of trade fights are weakening on the global economy, particularly for huge companies that sell finished products as well as components around the world. Samsung, that's a leading producer of the components in an array of gadgets, was already experiencing a slowdown in sales of smartphones and other technology products. It has been particularly hurt by a glut of memory chips. The continuing trade dispute between the United States and China has made things worse for the company. The Trump administration's restriction on sales to Huawei, a major buyer of Samsung memory chips, has reduced demand for the company's chips and forced it to cut prices. Although Trump recently said he would relax some of the restrictions, it remains unclear how far the easing will go. That decline in Samsung's memory chip business will probably be greater than whatever gains its smartphone divisions may reap from any drop in sales of Huawei's competing products. Samsung has also been forced to contend with added costs resulting from import tariffs imposed on washing machines by the Trump administration in a move meant to protect United States competitors like Whirlpool. Well, President Trump is promising an executive order that he intended to enable the United States government to pay lower prices for prescription drugs. Trump said his administration would announce a favored nations clause where the amount paid by the government for a drug would not exceed the lowest amount paid by other nations or companies. Prices in other countries are often lower because governments directly negotiate with manufacturers, Trump mentioned in his proposal when speaking with reporters, but provided no other details. Well, from Detroit and the Detroit Free Press, I didn't know we had a piece from that today. Auto sales slowed in the first half of 2019 compared with a year earlier, and industry experts say the back half of the year could be bumpy and unpredictable. The good news for automakers is their new vehicles are commanding higher prices from consumers, reaching new record levels. The Detroit 3 weathered trade wars and tariffs, job cuts, factory idling, and rising cost of new technology through June. The first half sales results were mixed, with the Detroit 3's total sales down, mitigated by strong sales in pickups and SUVs. Industry experts say sales will continue to slow, and market disruptors could surface that will likely lead to lower annual car sales this year versus last year. If the first half was volatile, are you expecting the second half to be calm? Said Cox Automotive Chief Economist Jonathan Smoke. He goes on to say, you'd be out of your mind just considering the number of things facing the economy and the auto market combined. Most automakers reported sales Tuesday, but Ford reported its second quarter results on Wednesday. For the quarter, Ford's sales, including its luxury brand Lincoln, declined by 4.1% to 650,000 vehicles, and sales through June are down 2.9% to 1.24 million. The results were supported by strong pickup sales and 1.3% gain in Lincoln sales through June. Ford saw its biggest decline come in the car segment, where year-to-date sales are down 22% compared with the same period last year, but its pickup sales are up 5.9%. Sales of the F-Series through June were flat at 448,398, but heavy-duty pickups saw a 52.8% increase. Well, Americans are generally satisfied with their personal finances, but many lack confidence in their ability to afford retirement and emergency expense or even their daily living costs. Roughly two-thirds, or 67%, describe their financial situation as generally good, up slightly from 62% who said so at the start of the year. That's according to a survey by the Associated Press NORC Center for Public Affairs Research. Their brighter economic outlook reflects in part a decade-long U.S. economic expansion that is now the longest on record. The expansion has slashed unemployment, revived the housing market, and boosted overall household wealth. But some groups, especially young adults, racial minorities, and the poor, say they remain financially insecure. Their anxiety is among the consequences of the economic expansion, which has benefited the most affluent for more than it has the others. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. I hope you've enjoyed it, and be sure to listen next time. I'm Bob Sutherland, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The reading of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency. They've served our community since 1974, and can be reached by dialing 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org.